or. Aelin flexed her hand as she neared the witch's room, the lights swaying in the rougher waves they'd encountered since midday. Rowan had healed the bruise on the back of her knuckles from the blow she'd dealt the witch, and she'd thanked him by locking the door to their room and getting on her knees before him. She could still feel his fingers fisted in her hair, still hear his groan. Rowan, now a step beside her, whipped his head in her direction. "What the hell are you thinking about?" But his pupils had flared enough that she was well aware he knew precisely where her mind had gone, as they walked down to the witch's cabin. That Fenris hung far back down the hall told her enough about the change in her scent. "The usual things," she shot back at Rowan with a simpering smile. "Killing, crocheting, how to make you emit those noises again." Rowan's face took on a pained expression that had her grinning, especially as his throat bobbed while he swallowed. Hard. "Round two," he seemed to say. "As soon as this is dealt with, we're having round two. This time I get to see what noises you make." Aelin nearly walked into the doorpost of Manon's open cabin. Rowan's low laugh made her focus, made her stop smiling like a lust-addled, lovesick idiot. Manon was sitting upright in bed, golden eyes darting between Rowan and Dorian and her. Fenris slid in behind them, his attention going right to the witch, no doubt stunned by the beauty, the grace, the blah-blah-blah perfectness of her. Manon said, low and flat, "Who is this?" Dorian lifted a brow, following her gaze. "You've met him before. He's Fenris, sworn warrior of Queen Maeve." It was the narrowing of Manon's eyes that had some instinct pricking, the flare of the witch's nostrils as she scented the male, his smell barely detectable in the cramped cabin. "No, he's not," Manon said. The witch's iron nails flashed out, a heartbeat before Fenris struck. Chapter 46. It was still instinct to go for a knife before Aelin went for her magic. And as Fenris leaped for Manon with a snarl, it was Rowan's power that sent him slamming through the room. Before the male had finished sliding across the floor, Aelin had a wall of flame up between them. "What the hell?" she spat. On his knees, Fenris clawed at his throat, at the air Rowan was choking off. The cabin was too small for them all to fit without getting too close. Ice danced at Dorian's fingertips as he slid beside Manon, still chained by the bed. "What did you mean, that's not Fenris?" Aelin said to the witch, without taking her eyes off him. Rowan let out a grunt behind her. And Aelin watched with a mix of horror and fascination as Fenris's chest expanded in a mighty breath. As he got to his feet and surveyed that wall of flame, as if Rowan's magic had worn off. And as Fenris's skin seemed to glow and melt away, as a creature as pale as fresh snow emerged from the vanishing illusion, Aelin gave Adian a subtle look over her shoulder. Her cousin instantly moved, keys to Manon's chains appearing from his pocket. But Manon didn't move as the thing took form. All the spindly limbs, its wings tucked in tight, the hideous warped face sniffing them. Manon's chains clanked free. Aelin said to the thing beyond her wall of flame, "What are you?" Manon answered for it, "Erewhon's bloodhound." The thing smiled, revealing rotted black stumps of teeth.
"At your service," it said.
"She said," Aelin realized, as she noted the small, shriveled breasts on its narrow chest.
So your guts stayed in.
It purred to Manon. Where is Fenris? Aelin demanded. The bloodhound's smile didn't falter.
On patrol of the ship. On another level, I assume. Unaware. Just as you were unaware that one of your own wasn't truly with you while I...
Ugh, another talker, Aelin said, flipping her braid over a shoulder. Let me guess. You killed a soldier, took his place, learned what you needed to know about how to get Manon off this ship and our patrols, and... What? You plan to carry her off into the night? Aelin frowned at the thing's thin body.
You look like you could barely lift a fork,
and haven't in months. The bloodhound blinked at her, then hissed. Manon let out a low laugh. Aelin said, Honestly, you could have just snuck in here and saved yourself 1,000 stupid steps.
Shifter,
the thing hissed, hungrily enough that Aelin's words stumbled. Its enormous eyes had gone right to Lysandra, snarling softly in the corner in ghost leopard form.
Shifter,
it hissed again, that longing twisting its features. And Aelin had a feeling she knew what this thing had begun as, what Erewhon had trapped and mutilated in the mountains around Morath. As I was saying, Aelin drawled as best she could, you really brought this upon yourself.
I came for the Blackbeak heir,
the bloodhound panted.
But look at you all. A trove worth your weight in gold.
Its eyes went murky, as if it were no longer here, as if it had drifted into another room.
Shit.
Aelin attacked with her flame. The bloodhound screamed, and Aelin's flame melted away into steam. Rowan was instantly there, shoving her back, sword out.
Her magic. You should have given me the witch.
The bloodhound laughed, and ripped the porthole clean out of the side of the ship.
Now he knows who you travel with, what ship you sail.
The creature lunged for the hole it had hewn in the side of the ship, spindrift misting in. A black-tipped arrow slammed into its knee, then another one. The bloodhound went down an inch from freedom. Snarling as he stepped into the room, Fenris fired another, pinning its shoulder into the wood planks. Apparently he didn't take well to being impersonated. He gave Rowan a seething look that said as much, and that demanded how they all hadn't noticed the difference. But the bloodhound wrenched herself up, black blood spraying the room, filling it with her reek. Aelin had a dagger angled, ready to fly. Manon was about to pounce. Rowan's hatchet was cocked. The bloodhound chucked a strap of black leather into the center of the room. Manon stopped dead.
Your second screamed when Erewhon broke her,
the bloodhound said.
His dark majesty sends this to remember her by.
Aelin didn't dare take her eyes off the creature, but she could have sworn Manon swayed. And then the bloodhound said to the witch,
A gift from a king of the Vog, to the last living Kraken queen.
Manon stared and stared at that braided leather band, the one Astarin had worn every day, even when battle did not demand it, and did not care what the bloodhound had declared to the others. Did not care if she was heir to the Blackbeak Witch Clan or Queen of the Krakens. Did not care if... Manon did not finish the thought over the roar that silenced everything in her head. The roar that came out of her mouth as she launched herself at the bloodhound. The arrows through the beast scratched at Manon as she tackled that dewy, bony body into the wood. Claws and teeth slashed for her face, but Manon got her hands around that neck, and iron tore through damp skin. Then those claws were pinned in the wood beneath phantom hands, as Dorian sauntered over, face so unyieldingly unmoved. The bloodhound thrashed, those claws trying to wrench free. The creature screamed as those invisible hands crunched down on bone, then through it. Manon gaped at the severed hands a moment before the bloodhound screamed, so loud her own ears rang. But Dorian crooned, "Be done with it." Manon lifted her other hand, wanting iron to shred her, and not steel. The others watched behind them, weapons ready. But the bloodhound panted,
"Don't you want to know what your second said before she died? What she begged for?"
Manon hesitated.
"What a horrible brand on her stomach. Unclean. Did you do that yourself, Blackbeak?"
"No, no, no, no.
A baby. She said she'd birthed a stillborn witchling."
Manon froze entirely, and didn't particularly care as the bloodhound lunged for her throat, teeth bared. It was not flame or wind that snapped the bloodhound's neck, but invisible hands. The crunch echoed through the room, and Manon whirled on Dorian Havilliard. His sapphire eyes were utterly merciless. Manon snarled,
"How dare you take my kill?"
Men on the deck began screaming, and Abraxos roared.
"Abraxos."
Manon turned on her heel and sprinted through the wall of warriors, careening down the hall, up the stairs. Her iron nails tore chunks out of the slippery wood as she hauled herself up, stomach aching. Muggy night air hit her, then the sea's scent. Then, there were six of them. Their skin was not bone white like the bloodhounds, but rather a mottled darkness, bred for shadows and stealth. Winged, all with humanoid faces and bodies.
"Ilkin,"
one of them hissed, as it disemboweled a man in one swipe of its claws.
"We are the Ilkin, and we have come to feast."
Indeed, pirates were dead on the deck, blood a coppery tang that filled her senses as she raced for where Abraxos's roar had sounded. But he was airborne, flapping high, tail swinging, the shapeshifter in wyvern form at his side, taking on three of the smaller figures, so much more nimble as they. Flame blasted into the night, along with wind and ice. One Ilkin melted, the second had its wings snapped, and the third froze into a solid block and shattered upon the deck. Eight more Ilkin landed, one ripping into a screaming sailor's neck on the foredeck. Manon's iron teeth snapped down. Flame blasted again, spearing for the approaching terrors, only for them to sail through it. The ship became a melee, as wings and talons tore into delicate human hides, as the immortal warriors unleashed themselves upon the Ilkin that landed on the deck. Adian hurtled after Aelin the moment the wyvern roared. He got as far as the main deck before those things attacked. Before Aelin's flame ruptured from the deck ahead, and he realized his cousin could look after herself because, shit, the Vol King had been busy. Ilkin, they'd called themselves. There were two of them now before him on the quarter deck, where he'd run to spare the first mate and captain from having their organs ripped out of their bellies. Both beasts were nearly 8 feet and born of nightmares, but in their eyes, those were human eyes, and their sense, like rotted meat, but human, partially. They stood between him and the stairs back to the main deck.
"What a bounty this hunt has yielded," one said.
Adian didn't dare take his attention off them, though he vaguely heard Aelin ordering Rowan to go help the other ships. Vaguely heard a wolf and a lion snarl, and felt the kiss of cold as ice slammed into the world. Adian gripped his sword, flipping it once, twice. Had the pirate lord sold them out to Morath? The way that bloodhound had looked at Lysandra. His rage became a song in his blood. They sized him up, and Adian flipped his sword again. Two against one. He might stand a chance. That was when the third lunged from the shadows behind him. Aelin killed one with Goldrin, beheading. The other two, they hadn't been too pleased by it, if their incessant shrieking in the moments following was any indication. A lion's roar cleaved the night, and Aelin prayed Gavriel was with Adian somewhere. The two in front of her, blocking the way below decks, finally stopped their hissy fits long enough to ask, "Where are your flames now?" Aelin opened her mouth, but then Fenris leaped out of a patch of night as if he'd simply run through a doorway and slammed into the one nearest. He had a score to settle, it seemed. Fenris's jaws went around the Ilken's throat, and the other whirled, claws out. She was not fast enough to stop it, as two sets of claws slashed through the white coat, through the shield he kept on himself, and Fenris's cry of pain barked across the water. Twin swords aflame plunged through two Ilken necks. Heads rolled onto the blood-slick deck. Fenris staggered back, making it all of a step before he crashed to the planks. Aelin surged for him, swearing. Blood and bone and greenish slime. Poison. Like those on the wyvern's tails. Like blowing out a thousand candles, she pushed aside her flame, rallied that healing water. Fenris shifted back into a male, his teeth clenched, swearing low and vicious, a hand against his torn ribs. "Don't move," she told him. She'd immediately sent Rowan to the other ships, and he'd tried to argue, but had obeyed. She had no idea where the wing leader was. The Kraken Queen. Holy gods. Aelin readied her magic, trying to calm her raging heart. "The others," panted Adian, limping for them, coated in black blood, "are fine." She almost sobbed in relief, until she noticed the way her cousin's eyes shone, and that Gavriel, bloodied and limping worse than Adian, was a step behind his son. What the hell had happened? Fenris groaned, and she focused on his wounds, that poison slithering into his blood. She opened her mouth to tell Fenris to lower his hand, when wings flapped. Not the kind she loved. Adian was instantly before them, sword out, grimacing in pain. But one of the Ilken lifted a claw-tipped hand. Parley. Her cousin halted, but Gavriel shifted imperceptibly closer to the Ilken as it sniffed at Fenris and smiled. "Don't bother," the thing told Aelin, laughing quietly. "He won't have much longer to live." Adian snarled, palming his fighting knives. Aelin rallied her flame. Only the hottest of her fire could kill them. Anything less and they remained unscathed. She'd think about the long-term implications of it later. "I was sent to deliver a message," the Ilken said, smiling over his shoulder toward the horizon. "Thank you for confirming in Skull's Bay that you carry what his dark majesty seeks." Aelin's stomach dropped to her feet. The key. Erewhon knew she had the word key. Chapter 47 Rowan hauled ass back to their ship, his magic near flinging him through the air. The other two ships had been left undisturbed. They'd even had the nerve to demand what the hell all the shouting was about. Rowan hadn't bothered to explain other than an enemy attack, and to drop anchor until it was over before he'd left. He'd returned to carnage. Returned with his heart beating so wildly he thought he'd vomit with relief as he swept in for the landing and beheld Aelin kneeling on the deck. Until he saw Fenris bleeding beneath her hands. Until that last Ilken landed before them. His rage honed itself into a lethal spear, his magic rallying as he dove through the sky, aiming for the deck. Concentrated bursts, he'd discovered, could get through whatever repellent had been bred into them. He'd ripped the thing's head right off. But then the Ilken laughed right as Rowan landed and shifted, looking over its thin shoulder.
Morath looks forward to welcoming you.
The creature smirked, and launched skyward before Rowan could lunge for it. But Aelin wasn't moving. Gabriel and Adian, bloodied and limping, were barely moving. Fenris, his chest a bloody mess with greenish slime. Poison. Power glowed at Aelin's hands as she knelt over Fenris, concentrating on that bit of water she'd been given. A drop of water in a sea of fire. Rowan opened his mouth to offer help when Lysandra panted from the shadows.
Is anyone going to deal with that thing, or should I?
Indeed, the Ilken was flapping for the distant coast, barely more than a bit of blackness against the darkened sky, hurtling for the coast, no doubt to fly right to Morath to report. Rowan snatched up Fenris's fallen bow and quiver of black-tipped arrows. None of them stopped him as he strode to the railing, blood splashing beneath his boots. The only sounds were the tapping waves, the whimpering of the injured, and the groan of the mighty bow, as he knocked an arrow and drew back the string. Farther and farther. His arm strained, but he honed in on that dark speck flapping away.
A gold coin says he misses, Fenris rasped.
Save your breath for healing, Aelin snapped.
Make it two, Adian said behind him. I say he hits.
You can all go to hell, Aelin snarled, but then added, Make it five. Ten says he downs it with the first shot.
Deal,
Fenris groaned, his voice thick with pain. Rowan gritted his teeth.
Remind me why I bother with any of you.
Then he fired. The arrow was nearly invisible as it sailed through the night. And with his faceight, Rowan saw with perfect clarity as that arrow found its mark. Right through the thing's head. Aelin laughed quietly as it hit the water, its splash visible even from the distance. Rowan turned and scowled down at her. Light shimmered at her fingertips as she held them over Fenris's ravaged chest. But he turned his glare on the male, then on Adian, and said,
Pay up, pricks.
Adian chuckled, but Rowan caught the shadow in Aelin's eyes as she resumed healing his former sentinel. Understood why she'd made light of it, even with Fenris injured before her. Because if Erewhon now knew their whereabouts, they had to move. Fast. And pray Rolf's directions to the lock weren't wrong. Adian was sick of surprises, sick of feeling his heart stop dead in his chest, as it had when Gavriel had leaped to save his ass with the Ilken, the lion tearing into them with a ferocity that had left Adian standing there, like a novice with his first practice sword. The stupid bastard had injured himself in the process, earning a swipe down his arm and ribs that sent the male roaring in pain. The venom coating those claws, mercifully, had been used up on other men. But it was the tang of his father's blood that launched Adian into action, that coppery, mortal scent. Gabriel had only blinked at him, as Adian had ignored the throbbing pain in his leg, courtesy of a blow moments before, right above his knee, and they'd fought back to back, until those creatures were nothing but twitching heaps of bone and flesh. He hadn't said a word to the male before sheathing sword and shield across his back, and stalking to find Aelin. She still knelt over Fenris, offering Rowan nothing more than a pat on his thigh as he stormed past to help with the other wounded. A pat on the thigh, for making a shot that Adian was fairly certain most of his bane would have judged to be impossible. Adian set down the pail of water she'd asked him to get for Fenris, trying not to wince as she wiped away the green poison that oozed out. A few feet away, his father was tending to a blubbering pirate, who had barely more than a tear to the thigh. Fenris hissed, and Aelin let out a grunt of pain herself. Adian pushed in.
What?
Aelin shook her head once, a sharp dismissal. But he watched as she locked eyes with Fenris, locked and held them in a way that told Adian whatever she was about to do would hurt. He'd seen that same look pass between healer and soldier 100 times on killing fields, and in the healer's tents afterward.
Why?
Fenris panted.
Didn't...
Another pant.
You just melt them.
Because I wanted to get some information out of them before you charged in, you bossy fey bastard. She gritted her teeth again, and Adian braced a hand on her back as the poison no doubt brushed against her magic, as she tried to wash it out. She leaned a bit into his touch.
Can heal on my own,
Fenris rasped, noting the strain.
Get to the others.
Oh, please, she snapped. You're all insufferable. That thing had poison on its claws.
The others...
Tell me how your magic works. How you can leap between places like that. A clever, easy way to keep him focused elsewhere. Adian scanned the deck, making sure he wasn't needed, and then carefully sopped up the blood and poison leaking from Fenris's chest. It had to hurt like hell. The insistent throbbing in his leg was likely nothing by comparison.
No one knows where it comes from. What it is,
Fenris said between shallow breaths, fingers curling and uncurling at his sides.
But it lets me slip between folds in the world. Only short distances, and only a few times before I'm drained, but... It's useful on a killing field,
he panted through his clenched teeth, as the outer edges of his gash began to reach for each other.
Aside from that, I've got nothing special. Speed, strength, swift healing, more than the average fey, but the same stock of gifts. I can shield myself and others, but can't summon an element.
Aelin's hand wavered slightly over his wound. What's your shield made of, then? Fenris tried and failed to shrug. But Gavriel muttered, from where he worked on the still whimpering pirate,
Arrogance.
Aelin snorted, but didn't dare take her eyes off Fenris's injury as she said, So you do have a sense of humor, Gavriel. The Lion of Dorinel gave a wary smile over his shoulder. The rare-sighted restrained twin to Adian's own flashing grins. Aelin had called him Uncle Kitty Cat all of 1 time, before Adian had snarled viciously enough to make her think carefully before using the term again. Gavriel, to his credit, had merely given Aelin a long-suffering sigh that seemed to be used only when she or Fenris were around.
That sense of humor only appears about once every century,
Fenris rasped.
So you'd better hope you settle, or else that's the last time you'll see it.
Aelin chuckled, though it faded quickly. Something cold and oily slid into Adian's gut.
Sorry,
Fenris added, wincing either at the words or the pain. Aelin asked before Adian let his words sink in,
Where did you come from?
Lorcan, I know, was a bastard in the slums.
Lorcan was a bastard in Maeve's palace. Don't worry.
Fenris smirked, his bronze face wan. Aelin's lips twitched toward a smile.
Connell and I were the sons of nobles, who dwell in the southeastern part of Maeve's lands.
He hissed.
Your parents?
Adian pressed, when Aelin herself seemed to be straining for words. He'd seen her heal little cuts, and slowly repair Manon's wound over days, but...
Our mother was a warrior,
Fenris said.
Each word labored.
She trained us as such. Our father was too, but was often away at war. She was tasked with defending our home, our lands, and reporting to Maeve.
Rasping, laboring breaths from both of them. Adian shifted so that Aelin could lean wholly against him, biting down on the weight it put on his already swollen knee.
When Con and I were 30, we were straining at the leash to go to Dorinel with her, to see the city, meet the queen, and do what young males like to do with money in their pockets and youth on their sides. Only Maeve took one look at us and...
He needed longer to catch his breath this time.
It didn't go well from there.
Adian knew the rest. So did Aelin. The last of the green slime slid out of Fenris's chest. And Aelin breathed.
She knows you hate the oath, doesn't she?
Maeve knows, Fenris said. And I have no doubt she sent me here, hoping I'd be tortured by the temporary freedom.
Aelin's hands were shaking, her body shuddering against his own. Adian slipped an arm around her waist.
I'm sorry you're bound to her,
was all Aelin managed. The wounds in Fenris's chest began knitting together. Rowan stalked over, as if sensing she was fading. Fenris's face was still grayish, still taut, as he glanced up at Rowan and said to Aelin,
This is what we are meant to do. Protect, serve, cherish. What Maeve offers is a mockery of that.
He surveyed the wounds now healing on his chest, mending so slowly.
But it is what calls to a fae male's blood, what guides him, what we're all looking for, even when we say we're not.
Adian's father had gone still over the wounded pirate. Adian, surprising even himself, said over his shoulder to Gabriel,
And do you find Maeve fulfills that? Or are you like Fenris?
His father blinked, about all the shock he'd show, and then straightened, the wounded sailor before him now sleeping off the healing. Adian bore the brunt of his tawny stare, tried to shut out the kernel of hope that shone in the lion's eyes.
I come from a noble house as well. The youngest of three brothers. I wouldn't inherit or rule, so I took to soldiering. It earned Maeve's eye, and her offer. There was, is no greater honor.
That's not an answer,
Adian said quietly. His father rolled his shoulders, fidgeting.
I only hated it once. Only wanted to leave once.
He didn't continue. And Adian knew what the unspoken words were. Aelin brushed a strand of hair out of her face.
You loved her that much?
Adian tried not to let his gratitude that she'd asked for him show. Gabrielle's hands were white-knuckled as they folded into fists.
She was a bright star in centuries of darkness. I would have followed that star to the ends of the earth if she had let me. But she didn't, and I respected her wishes to stay away, to never seek her out again. I went to another continent and didn't let myself look back.
The ship's creaking and the groaning of the injured were the only sounds. Adian clamped down on the urge to stand and walk away. He'd look like a child, not a general who'd fought his way through knee-deep gore on killing fields. Aelin said, again because Adian couldn't bring himself to say the words,
"You would have tried to break the blood oath for her? For them?"
"Honor is my code," Gabrielle said. "But if Maeve had tried to harm either you or her, Adian, I would have done everything in my power to get you out."
The words hit Adian, then flowed through him. He didn't let himself think about it, the truth he'd felt in each word, the way his name had sounded on his father's lips. His father checked the injured pirate for any lingering injuries, then moved on to another. Those tawny eyes slid to Adian's knee, swollen beneath his pants.
"You need to tend to that, or it'll be too stiff to function in a few hours."
Adian felt Aelin's attention snap to him, scanning him for injury, but he held his father's gaze and said,
"I know how to treat my own injuries."
The battlefield healers and the Bane had taught him enough over the years.
"Tend to your own wounds."
Indeed, the male had blood crusting his shirt. Lucky. So lucky the venom had already been wiped off those claws. Gabrielle blinked down at himself, his band of tattoos bobbing as he swallowed, then continued without another word. Aelin pushed off Adian at last, trying and failing to get to her feet. Adian reached for her, as the focus went out of her now dull eyes. But Rowan was already there, smoothly sweeping her up before she kissed the planks. Too fast. She must have drained her reserves too fast and without any food in her system. Rowan held his stare, Aelin's hair limp as she rested her head against his chest. The strain. Adian's guts twisted at it. Morath knew what it was going up against. Who it was going up against. Erewhon had built his commanders accordingly. Rowan nodded, as if in confirmation of Adian's thoughts, but only said,
"Elevate that knee."
Fenris had slipped into a light sleep before Rowan carried Aelin below. So Adian kept his own company for the rest of the night. First on watch, then sitting against the mast on the quarterdeck for a few hours, knee indeed elevated, unwilling to descend into the cramped, dim interior. Sleep was finally starting to tug at him, when wood groaned a few feet behind. And he knew it did so only because she willed it, to keep from startling him. The ghost leopard sat beside him, tail twitching, and met his eyes for a moment, before she laid her enormous head on his thigh. In silence, they watched the stars flicker over the calm waves, Lysandra nuzzling her head against his hip. The starlight stained her coat with muted silver, and a smile ghosted Adian's lips. Chapter 48. They worked through the night, weighing anchor only long enough for the crew to patch up the hole in Manon's room. It would hold for now, the captain told Dorian, but gods help them if they hit another storm before they got to the marshes. They tended to the wounded for hours, and Dorian was grateful for the little healing magic Rowan had taught him as he pieced flesh back together. Pretending it was a puzzle, or bits of torn cloth, kept his meager dinner from coming back up. But the poison, he left that to Rowan, Aelin, and Gavriel. By the time the morning had shifted into a sickly gray, their faces were sallow, dark smudges etched deep beneath their eyes. Fenris, at least, was limping around, and Adian had let Aelin tend to his knee only long enough to get him walking again. But they'd seen better days. Dorian's legs were wobbling a bit as he scanned the blood-soaked deck. Someone had dumped the creature's bodies overboard, along with the worst of the gore. But if what the bloodhound had said was true, they didn't have the luxury of pulling into a harbor to fix the rest of the damage to the ship. A low, rumbling growl sounded, and Dorian looked across the deck, to the prow. The witch was still there, still tending to Abraxos's wounds, as she had been all night. One of the creatures had bit him a few times, thankfully no poison in their teeth, but he'd lost some blood. Manon had not let anyone near him. Aelin had tried once, and when Manon snarled at her, Aelin had cursed enough to make everyone else halt, saying she'd Rudding deserve it if the beast died. Manon had threatened to rip out her spine. Aelin had given her a vulgar gesture, and Lysandra had been forced to monitor the space between them for an hour, perched in the rigging of the mainmast in ghost leopard form, tail swaying in the breeze. But now, Manon's white hair was limp, the warm morning wind tugging lazily at the strands as she leaned against Abraxos's side. Dorian knew he was towing a dangerous line. The other night, he'd been ready to slowly strip her naked, to put those chains to good use. And when he'd found her gold eyes devouring him as intently as he wanted to devour other parts of her, as if sensing his stare, Manon peered over at him. Even from across the deck, every inch between them went taut. Of course, Adian and Fenris instantly noted it, pausing where they now washed blood off the deck, and the latter snorted. Both had healed enough to walk, but neither had moved to interfere as Manon prowled toward him. If she hadn't fled or attacked yet, they must have decided she wasn't going to bother doing so now. Manon took up a space at the rail, gazing out at the endless water, the wisps of pink clouds smeared along the horizon. Dark blood stained her shirt, her palms. "Do I have you to thank for this freedom?" He braced his forearms on the wooden rail.
"Maybe."
Gold eyes slid to him. "The magic. What is it?"
"I don't know,"
Dorian said, studying his hands.
"It felt like an extension of me, like real hands I could command."
For a heartbeat, he thought of how they'd felt pinning her wrists, how her body had reacted, loose and tense where he usually liked it to be, while his mouth had barely caressed hers. Her golden eyes flared as if recalling it as well, and Dorian found himself saying,
"I wouldn't harm you."
"You liked killing the bloodhound, though." He didn't bother keeping the ice from his eyes.
"Yes."
Manon stepped close enough to brush a finger over the pale band around his throat, and he forgot that there was a ship full of people watching. "You could have made her suffer. You went for a clean blow instead. Why?"
"Because even with our enemies, there's a line."
"Then you have your answer."
"I didn't ask a question."
Manon snorted. "You've had that look in your eyes all night. if you're becoming a monster like the rest of us. The next time you kill, remind yourself of that line. Where do you stand on that line, witchling? She met his gaze, as if willing him to see a century of all that she'd done. I am not mortal. I do not play by your rules. I have killed and hunted men for sport. Do not mistake me for a human woman, princeling.
I have no interest in human women, he purred. Too breakable.
Even as he said it, the word struck some deep, aching wound in him.
The Ilken, he said, pushing past that pain. Did you know about them?
I assume they are a part of whatever is in those mountains. A hoarse female voice snapped. What do you mean, whatever is in those mountains?
Dorian nearly leaped out of his skin. Aelin, it seemed, had been taking some notes from her ghost leopard friend. Even Manon blinked at the blood-drenched queen now behind them. Manon eyed Adian and Fenris as they heard Aelin's demand, and came over, followed by Gavriel. Fenris's shirt was still hanging in strips. At least Rowan was now keeping watch from the rigging, and Lysandra was flying overhead, scouting for danger. The witch said, I never saw the Ilken, only heard of them. Heard their screaming as they died, then their roaring as they were remade. I didn't know that's what they were, or that Erewhon would send them so far from their Aerie. My shadows caught a glimpse of them just once. Their description matches what attacked last night.
Are the Ilken mostly scouts or warriors? Aelin said.
The fresh air seemed to have made Manon amenable to divulging information, because she leaned her back against the railing, facing the cabal of killers around them.
We don't know. They used the cloud cover to their advantage.
My shadows can find anything that doesn't want to be found, and yet they could not hunt or track these things.
Aelin tensed a bit, scowling at the water flowing past them. And then she said nothing, as if the words had vanished and exhaustion, something heavier than that, had set in.
Snap out of it, Manon said.
Adian loosed a warning growl. Aelin slowly lifted her eyes to the witch, and Dorian braced himself.
So you miscalculated, Manon said. So they tracked you. Don't get distracted with the minor defeats. This is war. Cities will be lost, people slaughtered. And if I were you, I would be more concerned about why they sent so few of the Ilken.
If you were me,
Aelin murmured in a tone that had Dorian's magic rising, ice cooling his fingertips. Adian's hand slid to his sword.
If you were me.
A low, bitter laugh. Dorian had not heard that sound since. Since a blood-soaked bedroom in a glass castle that no longer existed.
Well, you are not me, Blackbeak, so I'll trust you to keep your musings on the matter to yourself.
I am not a Blackbeak, Manon said.
They all stared at her, but the witch merely watched the queen. Aelin said with a wave of her scar-flecked hand,
Right, that matter of business. Let's hear the story, then.
Dorian wondered if they would come to blows, but Manon simply waited a few heartbeats, looked toward the horizon again, and said,
When my grandmother stripped me of my title as heir and wingleader, she also stripped my heritage. She told me that my father was a Crocken prince, and she had killed my mother and him for conspiring to end the feud between our peoples and break the curse on our lands.
Dorian glanced to Adian. The wolf of the north's face was taut, his Ash River eyes shining bright,
churning at the possibilities of all that Manon implied. Manon said a bit numbly, as if it was the first time she'd ever spoken it to herself.
I am the last Crokin queen.
The last direct descendant of Rhiannon Crokin herself.
Aelin only sucked on a tooth, brows lifting.
And, Manon continued, whether my grandmother acknowledges it or not, I am heir to the Blackbeak clan. My witches, who have fought at my side for 100 years, have spent most of it killing Crokins, dreaming of a homeland that I promised to return them to. And now I am banished, my 13 scattered and lost, and now I am heir to our enemy's crown. So you are not the only one, Majesty, who has plans that go awry. So get yourself together and figure out what to do next.
Two queens. There were two queens among them, Dorian realized.
Aelin closed her eyes and let out a rough, breathy laugh. Adian again tensed, as if that laugh might easily end in violence or peace. But Manon stood there, weathering the storm. When Aelin opened her eyes, her smile subdued but edged, she said to the Witch Queen,
I knew I saved your sorry ass for a reason.
Manon's answering smile was terrifying. The males all seemed to loosen a tight breath, Dorian himself included. But then Fenris pulled at his lower lip, scanning the skies.
What I don't get is why wait so long to do any of this? If Erewhon wants you lot dead,
a nod toward Dorian and Aelin,
why let you mature, grow powerful?
Dorian tried not to shudder at the thought, how unprepared they'd been.
Because I escaped Erewhon, Aelin said.
Dorian tried not to remember that night 10 years ago, but the memory of it snapped through him, and her, and Adian. He thought I was dead, and Dorian, his father shielded him as best he could. Dorian shut out that memory, too, especially as Manon angled her head in question.
Fenris said, Maeve knew you were alive. Odds are so did Erewhon.
Maybe she told Erewhon, Adian said.
Fenris whipped his head to the general. She's never had any contact with Erewhon or Otterlin.
As far as you know, Adian mused, unless she's a talker in the bedroom.
Fenris's eyes darkened. Maeve does not share power. She saw Otterlin as an inconvenience. Still does.
Adian countered, Everyone can be bought for a price.
Nameless is the price of Maeve's allegiance, Fenris snapped. It can't be purchased.
Aelin went utterly still at the warrior's words. She blinked at him, her brows narrowing, as her lips silently mouthed the words he'd said.
What is it?
Adian demanded.
Aelin murmured, Nameless is my price.
Adian opened his mouth, no doubt to ask what had snagged her interest, but Aelin frowned at Manon.
Can your kind see the future?
See it as an oracle can?
Some, Manon admitted. The Blue Bloods claim to.
Can other clans?
They say that for the ancients, past and present and future bleed together.
Aelin shook her head and walked toward the door that led to the hall of cramped cabins. Rowan swooped off the rigging and shifted, his feet hitting the planks just as he finished. He didn't so much as look at them, as he followed her into the hall and shut the door behind them.
What was that about?
Fenris asked.
An ancient, Dorian mused. Then murmured to Manon, Baba Yellowlegs.
They all turned to him. But Manon's fingers brushed against her collarbone, where the neck of Aelin's scars from Yellowlegs still ringed her neck in stark white. This winter she was at your castle, Manon said to him, working as a fortune teller.
And what? She said something to that degree?
Adian crossed his arms. He'd known of the visit, Dorian recalled. Adian had always kept an eye on the witches, on all the power players of the realm, he'd once said. Manon stared the general down. Yellowlegs was a fortune teller, a powerful oracle. I bet she knew who the queen was the moment she saw her, and saw things she planned to sell to the highest bidder.
Dorian tried not to flinch at the memory.
Aelin had butchered Yellowlegs when she threatened to sell his secrets. Aelin had never implied a threat against her own. Manon continued. Yellowlegs wouldn't have told the queen anything outright, only in veiled terms, so it'd drive the girl mad when she figured it out. A pointed glance at the door through which Aelin had vanished. None of them said anything else, even as they later ate cold porridge for breakfast. The cook, it seemed, hadn't made it through the night.
Rowan knocked on the door of their private bathing room.
She'd locked it. Walked into their room, then into the bathing room, and locked him out. And now she was puking her guts up.
Aelin,
he growled softly. A ragged intake of breath, then retching, then more vomiting.
Aelin,
he snarled, debating how long until it was socially acceptable for him to break down the door.
Act like a prince, she'd snarled at him the other night.
I don't feel well,
was her muffled response. Her voice was hollow, flat in a way he hadn't heard for some time now.
Then let me in, so I can take care of you,
he said as calmly and rationally as he could. She'd locked him out. Locked him out.
I don't want you to see me like this.
I've seen you wet yourself. I can handle vomiting, which I have also seen you do before.
10 seconds. 10 more seconds seemed like a fair enough amount of time before he crunched down on the handle and splintered the lock.
Just give me a minute.
What was it about Fenris's words that set you off?
He'd heard it all from his post on the mast. Utter silence. Like she was spooling the raw terror back into herself, shoving it down into a place where she wouldn't look at it or feel it or acknowledge it. Or tell him about it.
Aelin.
The lock turned. Her face was gray. Her eyes red-rimmed. Her voice broke as she said,
I want to talk to Lysandra.
Rowan looked at the bucket she'd half-filled, then at her bloodless lips, at the sweat beaded on her brow. His heart stopped dead in his chest as he contemplated that she might not be lying, and why she might be ill. He tried to center, but the vomit was too overpowering, the space too small and full of brine. He stumbled back a step, shutting out the thoughts. Without another word, he left their room. He was numb as he hunted down the shifter, now returned in inhuman form, as she devoured a cold, soggy breakfast. With a concerned look, Lysandra silently did as he commanded. Rowan shifted and soared so high that the ship turned into a bobbing speck below. Clouds cooled his feathers.